Book 9, The Tragedy of the Poppies. Meanwhile, Juno sent Iris down to have a chat with Turnus, who was lounging about in the sacred grove like you do.
"This is your chance, Turnus. Aeneas has gone to seek the help of Evander. What are you waiting for? Attack them now, before they have the time to prepare."
"Iris..." Turnus yawned as she flew off, leaving a rainbow in her wake. "First Alecto, now you. Who keeps sending all these B-list deities to pester me? Fine. Whatever you say." He soon had the army moving across the plains, like when the Ganges rises, fed by its seven rivers. The Trojans could see the cloud of dust rising from the army of horses, and Caicus yelled out first to raise the alarm. They ran to man the walls, as Aeneas had instructed, should anything arise while he was away. They closed the gates, and though they longed for battle, they locked themselves away. Turnus went on ahead with 20 hand-picked men, and he rushed straight into the heart of the fighting. But the Trojans were nowhere to be seen. He couldn't believe it. All this talk of their bravery during the Trojan War, not the Greek War, the Trojan War, and now they were cowering away inside their towers. He stalked along the walls, calling out to the Trojans to act like men, like a wolf pacing along a pen of sheep at night, beside himself with rage at being so close to the enemy and yet unable to reach them. His mind was burning with lust for battle, burning with ideas. What could he do? How could he smoke them out? Of course, the fleet. Raging with the same fire that they launched at the ships, Turnus led the Latins to the shore to set the boats alight. But this won't do, will it? Fate's on the side of the Trojans now, remember, guys. Luckily for them, back in the good old days when Aeneas was first cutting down wood to build his ships, Cybele herself went to Jupiter, her son.
"Jupiter, honey, I have a favour to ask you. I let Aeneas cut down my favourite maple trees to make his ships, but, well, I'm rather fond of them, you know. Will you make sure they don't get too damaged? It would just be such a shame."
"Oh, my days, Mum. They're just bloody bits of wood, are you for real? I can't keep giving out favours like this. Juno is already on my back enough as it is. I can't make any promises. But when Aeneas reaches Italy and his fate is fulfilled, sure, whatever. The boats can be as immortal as you want. I'll even turn them into flaming nymphs. Just don't tell Juno, all right?"
So, bearing Jupiter's words in mind, you will now completely understand why the Latins were so perplexed when they threw their torches at the ships and, instead of them catching a light as you would expect, the boats burst three of their ropes, turned into nymphs, and swam away. In the distance, a low voice could be heard crying, "Be free, sacred trees! Be free!" Anyway, though this was obviously not a good sign for the Latins, and several of the more sensible men, such as Messapus, were quite unnerved by the sight, as you would be, Turnus wasn't put out in the slightest.
No. This is good, guys. This is good. The gods obviously don't like the Trojans because they've taken away their boats. They can't escape us now, can they? Because, like, the boats are gone. They're stuck, aren't they? So it's fine. Ignore all their nonsense about fate as well. Like, who are they to know anything? I have my own destiny to fulfill. To kill that asshole who's claimed my own bride. They've sinned before, these men, and they've been defeated before. And they shall be again. Look at them, hiding behind their walls.
I don't need 1,000 ships, or a shield from the gods, or a horse to hide in. We'll destroy them right here in broad daylight and show them we are not afraid. Who's with me? The men cheered and then set up camp because it was basically bedtime. The Trojans were keeping watch, of course. Each man remained vigilant, guarding the walls. Nisus, do you guys remember him from book 5? I mentioned he was quite important and here we go. Nisus was one of the best archers and spearsmen, and he'd come with Euryalus, one of the youngest and most handsome of the Trojans. They were in love, and so they did everything together, and Euryalus had come along to hang out with Nisus during his guard duty.
I think I've had an idea, Nisus said quietly to Euryalus. We need Aeneas back, right? Well, the Latins, the Vitulians, over there, they're all asleep. I reckon I could sneak through and get to Palantium. I'm pretty sure I know the way.
Well, you're certainly not doing that alone, Euryalus replied simply.
Absolutely not. Nisus looked at him now. We've not come this far for me to lose you now. And your mum's the last of the women with us. She'd kill me if anything happened to you.
Excuses, excuses. Euryalus kissed him and took his hand. Come on, before we change our minds.
Euryalus led them away to find Ascanius. Though most of the Trojans were asleep, the higher council of men, and Ascanius, who was probably half asleep, were sitting up trying to work out what to do. They couldn't fight, but they had never anticipated this. How were they going to find Aeneas? They were discussing all of these matters, leaning on their spears and staring gravely into a fire, when Nisus and Euryalus rocked up. Iulus, who, like I say, was probably half asleep and bored on the ground, was the only one to notice them coming and waved excitedly.
We have an idea, Nisus began. The Latins are asleep, and we're pretty sure we know a way through their camp. We've been hunting all around there for days. We'll go to Palantium, and we'll get Aeneas back.
Aletes, a more mature and sensible Trojan, spoke instead of Iulus, which probably was for the best. The gods have blessed us. He clapped a hand on their shoulders and smiled. Thank Zeus, someone's offered to do the job. You're braver than any of us. I'm sure Aeneas and Ascanius will never forget your offer tonight.
More than that, Ascanius piped up, very excited. I promise, in front of all the gods, like ever, especially the Penates and Vesta, to give you, I'll give you 2 silver cups if you bring my dad back, and, and some tripods, and 2 talents of gold, and this random mixing bowl from Dido. And, he was getting very excited now, having never had such power in his life, and was probably ignoring all the warning looks from Aletes. If we win, I'll make sure you, Nisus, get Turnus' horse and all his armour, and my dad will give you more besides, and Euryalus, you could be my new best friend. Deal?
Deal. Euryalus grinned. Though, my mum doesn't know that I'm going. She's been very lonely since we came here. You promise that, you know, regardless, you'll look after her, right? Iulus looked at Euryalus for a moment and took his hand.
I will love her as if she was my own.
He then gave Euryalus his sword, while Menestheus gave him a lion's hide and Aletes gave him his helmet. The Trojans escorted them to the gates with Iulus, all of a sudden displaying the spirit of a man far beyond his teenage years. He passed on to them many prayers and thoughts, but they were futile. The breeze scattered them among the clouds. Nisus and Euryalus set out into the darkness of night. The Latin camp was silent. All the men were asleep and very drunk. They were tangled up along the bank in amongst their chariots and their armour and just one another.
Now listen to me, Nisus hissed to Euryalus. I'll go first, and I'll kill anyone in our way. Stay close behind me, and make sure no one creeps up on us, right?
Nisus, like a lion in a pen full of sheep, killed every single man they passed, chopping off their heads while they slept like slashing through a field of wildflowers. Euryalus was just as bad. He was younger than his boyfriend, and he probably wanted to prove himself, to show he was just as good a warrior despite his age. He started to go further afield, and Nisus, noticing he'd got a bit carried away, took his hand.
Let's stop. I think we've got enough of them. It's almost morning.
They ignored most of the treasure that tempted them on their way, though Euryalus could not resist claiming medallions and a studded belt from Ramnes, which were old, handed down relics of Xenia, a Greek word, but it means guest friendship or hospitality, and it's a really useful one to know, actually, that Xenia. He also took a rather fancy plumed helmet from Messapus. At that very moment, 300 Latins who had been sent out on a mission by Turnus now returned. They could see Nisus and Euryalus making off, as Euryalus had forgotten the helmet he was wearing, and moonlight shimmered off it as they skimmed through the trees.
Hey! You there!
Volsens, a Latin, called out into the night. The Trojans did not reply, so of course the Latins rushed after them. Euryalus, choked by the weight of darkness and the forest and his armour, lost his way. Nisus escaped, coming to the edge of the forest and turning suddenly, realising, having that awful, awful sinking sensation that he was alone.
Jove, no.
He darted back into the forest, trying to retrace every deceptive turn. He followed the sounds of horses and men, and he saw Euryalus being carried off by the entire army. He didn't know what to do, what to use, how to attack. Should he throw himself into the thick of it, die a hero's death? And Nisus reached for his spear and looked up at the moon.
Goddess, help me. If you recall any of the offerings my family has ever given to you, please help me.
Nisus threw all of his weight behind the spear, which struck Sulmo in his diaphragm and killed him instantly. The Latins fell into revolt and confusion. Another of their men, Tagus, was struck down, and they began to panic, dropping everything to protect themselves against their invisible enemy.
Never mind! This'll get him out!
Volsens cried with rage, and he grabbed Euryalus and held his sword to his throat. Nisus, of course, could not bear this. Out of his mind with love and pure, unadulterated fear, he threw himself into the moonlight.
Okay. Here, I'm here. It was me. I'm sorry. He's innocent. Please let him go. This was all my idea. It's me you were looking for. It's his only fault is loving me too much, the wrong person too much. Please.
He was still pleading when Volsens, smiling, drove his sword through Euryalus right there and then. Euryalus's body crumpled, like when a poppy bows its head in the rain.
Nisus roared and threw himself completely into the heart of the Bruttullians. He killed as many as he could, even though he was being attacked from all sides. And when he reached Volsens, who was the only one he really wanted to hurt, to feel real pain, he stabbed him right in the throat.
Volsens killed him at the same time, and thus Nisus fell, defeated, over the body of Euryalus, protecting him even in death. The Latins were devastated when they woke up and found so many of their men dead after the silent slaughter of the night before, particularly that of Volsens. But that was fine. Good, even, because Turnus could use the anger to his advantage, stirring the men to war and encouraging them to parade Nisus and Euryalus' heads on sticks. When the Trojans saw this from their towers, they didn't know what to do.
Rumour, of course, went straight to Euryalus' mother, who screamed on the battlements between the horrified Trojans and fell to her knees when she saw her son's dismembered head. Virgil gives her an awful lot to say, but I can't imagine anyone would be capable of such a speech at a time like this, so I imagine that she just screamed. Screamed and screamed and begged to be killed, to be thrown from the towers. Now the only point of her living had been lost. The Trojans couldn't bear it. Iülus asked, kindly, for her to be taken back inside and comforted. The fighting came out of nowhere. The Volsci descended upon the city walls, desperate to find a weak point, and the Trojans, though exhausted with everything, with emotion, with hunger, threw down every kind of missile they could put their hands on. They even managed to roll over an enormous boulder, maybe from one of the towers, and crush the Rutulians below. It was basically a complete shit show. There's a whole lot of death and names to come now, so I'm going to give you guys the best condensed version I can manage, right? Some of the Trojans were lying in wait in a tower, but Turnus, who was obviously a bit of a pyromaniac at the best of times, lobbed a torch at it. Only two men escaped the suffocating flames, Helenor and Lycus. Helenor launched himself into the thickest part of the battle he could find, and he died. Lycus, who was a quicker runner, tried to get back to the Trojans, but Turnus killed him easily, gloating all the while like an eagle plucking up a hare or a swan. Endless numbers of innocent men, young and old, loved by their families on both sides, were killed. Numanus, a Latin who had been engaged to Turnus' sister, was jeering at the Trojans. "Aren't you tired of losing yet, Trojans? Aren't you tired of stealing other men's brides? We are not men of a delicate disposition like those well-spoken Greeks. We take our newborn babies and hard them in icy rivers. We're real men of a much stronger kind than you could ever imagine. We don't get sluggish. We don't stop. When we get old, we put our helmets over our grey hair and we get on with it. Look at you in your pretty clothes and your dancing. I think we're fighting a load of old Trojan women. We must be mistaken. Where are the men? Go on, dance home now." Ascanius could stand the insults no longer. He prayed to Jupiter, promised lovely annual sacrifices, and as the sound of thunder rippled in applause across the sky, he let out his first arrow into battle ever and killed Numanus on the spot. "In your face!" He, like his father, had not quite mastered the way with words yet. Apollo, at that moment, recognised teenage emotions as he was essentially a perpetual teenager himself, and smiled. Iülus had become a man, but they couldn't very well have the fate of Rome destroyed because one hope for the future got a little bit carried away in battle. He took on the guise of Butes, a friend of Anchises and the appointed companion to Ascanius. "Let's go inside now, eh, son? You've done a remarkable job, but we've got to keep you safe now. Your dad would be distraught if anything happened to you." Apollo faded away before them all, not bothering to conceal that he was a god. Ascanius didn't think much of this and was desperate to carry on, but luckily the other Trojans were sensible and could see what they were dealing with, and they forced him back inside. As he went, the racket of the battle, of shields and helmets ringing with blows, was like a hailstorm. Furious. Two fairly idiotic Trojans, Pandarus and Bitias, got so confident now that they actually opened the gates to let the enemy in. Can we just take that in for a second? They opened the gates and let the Latins in, right? Like, why? Anyway, as they were so sure of themselves. It's actually, genuinely, is such a ludicrous idea that every time I read it, I get a little bit mad. But anyway, guys, I shouldn't be so biased. Despite my feelings, and perhaps your very sensible feelings, they actually did quite well from it. They stood like two great oaks on either side and smashed the skulls in of any Latin that tried to get past. So, you know, I imagine a bit like, you know, that mallet game
in an arcade. Do you know which ones I mean? Anyway, sorry, I'm getting confused. Soon, not only were the Latins too scared to go inside, but the Trojans grew bold enough to venture out, taking over the Latin camp. Fate really is on their side now. This was a bit arrogant, really, and, you know, in hindsight, as the battle was balanced when Turnus found out and ran in to kill a couple of the Trojans encroaching on his territory. This wasn't helped by Mars, who I really don't think should have joined in at all, as the other gods were steering fairly clear at this point. And this is getting a bit too much like Troy for my liking, but anyway, this wasn't helped when Mars instilled courage into the Latins and a dash of fear into the Trojans. Pandarus, when he saw his brother had been killed, knew his end was coming and so decided to close the gates of the city again, not realising that he'd actually penned himself in with Turnus, like a tiger amongst cattle. It was a bit stupid, wasn't it? The Trojans were thrown into confusion, naturally, when they realised who they'd been locked in with. I mean, I'd be wetting myself, wouldn't you? Even Virgil calls Pandarus a fool here. But Pandarus stepped up, as he should, you know, because it was his fault. "Do your worst, Turnus," he cried out. "There's no way out. You're surrounded by enemies." "Do tell Priam that you met as second Achilles, won't you?" Turnus smirked. There was a brief skirmish, but Juno made sure that Pandarus' attacks were deflected. Again, the gods have started interfering, guys, why? Anyway, and Turnus killed him with ease, slicing his face hideously in two. Turnus was, of course, in his element, fueled by lust for death. He chased and slaughtered every Trojan he could get his hands on. Menestheus, one of the Trojan leaders, we've met him a couple of times now, couldn't believe his eyes. "What are you all doing? He's no Achilles. He's not bloody immortal. He's not been dipped into a river by his mother. There's only one of him and dozens of you. Are you an army or not? Did we fight the Greeks for 10 years to be brought down by one puffed up teenager? You're humiliating yourselves." This did the trick. The tables turned and the Trojans managed to corner Turnus, to hem him in on the high walls like a group of hunters pressing in on a lion. He hurled himself into the thick of enemies a few times, but there was a domestic in Olympus at that moment, as Jupiter had sent Iris down to stop Juno from interfering, and even she had to abandon Turnus now. He never stopped fighting, of course, but it was one against hundreds. The Trojans were so close they could tear the plumes from his helmet. He could smell their sweat, and so, sick and heaving with sudden exhaustion, Turnus did the only thing he could and leapt headfirst over the walls and into the river, still in his full armour. The Tiber soothed him and carried him away, washing the blood from his skin and delivering him back to his people.